What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
Hello, once again, ladies, gentlemen, fanatics of all ages. Welcome to another episode of Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer, joined as always by The Athletic's Matt Gelb. And Matt, it was another good week in Phillies land, even though the weekend fell a little bit flat toward the end in the series against the Twins. The Phillies are still comfortably in wild card position with their eyes set on securing that fourth seed at the moment, which is a nice little shift in goals and perspective since a couple of weeks ago. They are 11 games over 500. They've been steadily double digits over 500 for most of this week. And they're really just in a better position now where they have pitchers who are throwing well. They have hitters who are hitting well. Defense is, well, we don't need to talk about that too much. It's still there. They play defense. But Matt, they are a solidly wild card contending team, much as we thought they'd be. It's just that the standings now reflect more of what we were expecting for most of this year. Matt, I think what it boils down to is that this team is really enjoying a nice stretch of play. They are doing what we thought they should do here with a weaker August schedule. And they seem to be in a better position than a lot of their competition for these wildcard spots. So let me actually bring you in with a question first. How are you? How was your weekend?
Terrific.
Wonderful. You were able to skip the game on Saturday where it was a 1,000,000% humidity and the team couldn't buy a hit.
You were there. I wasn't.
Yes, I was. It was great. It was great if you like drinking beer to keep yourself cool. Is basically what you could get out of that game.
Who doesn't
like that? Who doesn't, right? So Saturday and Sunday didn't go so well against the Twins. The Twins have decent pitching, but you know, otherwise that's a series you kind of hope you want to win. Doesn't really matter too much though. I'm looking at the wildcard standings right now. The Giants lost again last night while the Phillies were idle. The Phillies are pretty solidly in that four seed, that top wildcard position. And Matt, it looks like the herd is starting to thin out a little bit more. Are we ready to call a couple of these teams more dead in the water than I think we were this time last week or 2 weeks ago?
I mean, I look at it, it's August 15th. There's 7 weeks left, roughly. And I see five teams for four spots. And I'm okay. Counting the NL Central in there. Okay. So three wild cards, the NL Central. I see five teams right now. I see the Brewers, the Phillies, the Giants, the Cubs, and the Marlins. And I think the Padres are done. They're seven games under. They have not played well at all. The Diamondbacks are in an unbelievable tailspin. The Reds are still four games over 500, and I guess like maybe you could quibble with me if you think that they're still alive or not. I just don't think, you know, they're getting some pitching back here. They're supposed to get some pitching back here at the end of the month. It's a very young team, which is good and bad. I think a young team, though, you know, you start to get September, and you get a lot of guys who haven't played that many games in a season or haven't been through this before, and I think, you know, the lack of pitching there is really going to hurt them. So I see five teams for four spots, and that doesn't mean like the Phillies can just, you know, lose, you know, a lot of series. Like, you know, like you said, the Twins series is a series that they, you know, should have won at home after winning the first game of the series. But
yeah,
you know, their margin for error is pretty decent. I mean, they're roughly, you know, high 80s, 90% chance right now, current odds of making the postseason. And I don't see why they shouldn't get that four seed. And I think, you know, being in the spot, you know, being chased instead of chasing someone else like they were for the majority of August and into September, it's a much nicer place to be.
I really can't overstate how the last about 2 weeks or so, maybe 3 weeks at this point, have worked in the Phillies' favor just dramatically. Like, immense. Dramatically.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at, you know, Baseball Reference hasn't updated for the day by the time we're recording this. So I forgive me if I'm off by a game or so. The Phillies were idle, but some other teams played last night. I'm just looking at records over the last, you know, X amount of games. BRF breaks that out. The Phillies in their last 20 are 12-8, which is good. You want to win 12 out of your every 20 games. And you look at everybody else in the National League who's competing for these wild card spots. Again, we can leave the Braves and Dodgers out of this because they're so far ahead of everybody. Basically, everybody else in the National League in their last 20 games is under 500. Meanwhile, the Phillies, you know, were four up. So they've gained multiple games on everybody over a span of 3 weeks. And now it's why you turn around and you're like, oh my God, they're solidly in the top wild card spot. It's amazing how fast that changed. You know, I almost felt like I was keeping up with it in the moment. But now looking back and the way some of these games went yesterday with the Giants getting thrashed by the Rays at home, you know, I think I agree with you to an extent about the herd thinning. I, for some reason, and it's getting irrational at this point because, you know, you mentioned they're way under 500. I cannot shake the Padres from my brain. I can't do it. I look at that team and I have to think, A, they're one of the most unique in a bad way teams I've ever seen with the amount of talent they have, underperforming, but being 9 games under their Pythag. Like, their run differential is great. It says they should be, by their record, basically level with the Phillies, just going off run differential. But they're underperforming by like 9, 10 games. And even though it's getting late in the day, they're running out of runway, I can't help but think the Padres have another run in them. And with the way everybody else is playing, I don't know. I think it's possible that they could overtake the Diamondbacks, who, like you mentioned, are an incredible tailspin. I don't know why they just decided to fall apart. Maybe it's pitching, but some of their other guys aren't hitting either. The Reds, you know, if they can keep out slugging guys hanging in there until, you know, Green and Lodolo come back, like you were talking about, maybe there's something there too, but that, you have to think that peters out. The Cubs seem like a pretty good team. They're probably going to hang around for a bit. And the Marlins, we've all been waiting for the Marlins to continue to fall, and maybe there's still more room for them to fall. Who knows? There's a lot of uncertainty. I feel like the Padres are in the mix, which is weird for a team that's 7 games under 500 this point late in the season. I don't think they're a threat to the Phillies, though. That's for sure.
No, I would say you should forget about the Padres, but there's one thing about the Padres that they has going in their favor is that they do have control of their own destiny, essentially. I mean, this is their schedule. They have 3 against the Orioles right now, mm-hmm. then 4 against the Diamondbacks, 3 against the Marlins, 3 against the Brewers, 3 against the Cardinals, 4 against the Giants, 3 against the Phillies, 3 against the Astros, 3 against the Dodgers. That takes them into mid-September. That's a pretty challenging schedule. That's essentially, you know, a postseason team, caliber team, except for the Cardinals, every day for the next month.
Yeah, that won't help. That'll make it hard. You know, when it gets to this point in the year, it also becomes as much about the raw number of games back you are as it is the number of teams you have to leapfrog to get to that position.
They're 7 games under 500, and it's August 15th. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I agree with you. They're a talented team, but I just don't. I think they're done. So I think with the, you know, I don't. Look, I mean, the Phillies have a history of making everything harder than it needs to be, right?
Yeah, so they do. They do.
There is no, you know, we with that caveat, you know, it's reasonable to start looking at it and being like, okay, how can they not only get that 4 seed, but also really set things up and figure out how they want to be going into the postseason, especially when you talk about the pitching. And I think there's a lot of different scenarios that they're going to entertain, perhaps try out in September, you know, given the luxury of being able to do that. And I'm not saying that they're just going to like totally fumble away games.
Sure.
I don't think that's the case, but I think they have some leeway here, right?
Well, the more they bank these wins and hopefully keep this cushion up. Yeah, probably. I mean, the 4th seed is the spot to be, you know, you have multiple teams that you're ahead of just by nature of the way the system's set up. You want to make sure that you get a spot. If you're the top of those 3 spots, then yeah, I would think you'd have some wiggle room to get things configured You know, we were talking last year, I remember coming, you know, ramping up to that Astros series at the end of the regular season, where we were like, all right, here's what we think the Phillies need to do in order to put themselves in plumb position to line up their pitching the way they want. And they did that. Now,
it was
a big reason why I think they were able to, you know, do as well as they did in part. Now, what you can hope for in 2023, and like you said, there might still be something weird lurking around the corner.
No, but definitely is. We know that.
Yeah. If they keep playing well through the rest of this month, maybe padding their lead a little bit, we can start thinking about that now. That feels good to say. Then, yeah, maybe they can start looking ahead toward these late September series and think about, all right, who do we move to the pen? Who do we pitch when? Who do we need to give an extra couple of days to in the bullpen, Craig Kimbrell, and get themselves ready for a short burst series when they're going to need everybody at their disposal.
Yeah, and I wrote a little bit about this at The Athletic this week. I fully expect them to abandon the six-man rotation after this week.
Oh, that's
soon. That's not because it's not going to work or it's not where you, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's because a couple things. Number one, they have every Thursday off the next 5 weeks. And if you're on a six-man rotation, that means guys are pitching once a week. And it's
like college
too much rest. Yeah, it's too much rest. And you might, and people might think that that's crazy, but I'm telling you, like, you can read my story with Zach Wheeler said, and I talked to other pitchers. It's just, these guys have a routine, and one extra day here and there, they'll take that. They, you know, guys like that, two or three extra days every week or 2 days every week is too much. You know, for example, Wheeler is going to pitch tonight in Toronto, and he had threw two bullpen sessions between the starts. This is his seventh day or eighth day, I think. He's on 6 or 7 days rest. It's just too much for some of these guys. And so the other factor here is that you want to protect not only your starters, but also your relievers too. And so Jose Alvarado is going to pitch a rehab game Tuesday night, tonight in Lehigh Valley. And then the plan is for him to do another one Friday in Lehigh Valley. And that would put him on track to be activated for that Giants series Monday, a week from today, or week, you know, in a week from, you know, against the Giants at Citizens Bank Park, which is shaping up to be, you know, rather pivotal, but a significant series. The Phillies can put some more distance between them and Gabe Kapler. And when Alvarado is ready, if he goes through these two rehab outings and comes out fine, they probably have to go back to an 8-man bullpen. And it's because that right now they only have what they consider to be one spot that's sort of interchangeable. And you saw them swap out Junior Marte for Luis Ortiz.
Right.
But if Alvarado comes back and they stick with a 7-man bullpen, then Alvarado would be replacing Ortiz. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you have essentially 6 high leverage relievers and a long man in Dylan Covey, who they're committed to keeping. You would have Kimbrel, Soto, Dominguez, Hoffman, Strom, Alvarado. And the only one of those guys, I mean, really, you know, like Soto and Dominguez can be sent down, but they're not going to be sent down. So you have really a bullpen that's filled with high leverage guys who are essentially one inning guys, except for Strom, and they can't be optioned or swapped out. And I think that sets up a problem. They probably at that point, the extra man in the bullpen, sort of your middle reliever who can be optioned out, can pitch 2 innings, is probably more important than the 6th starter because of all those off days coming up. And there's also other considerations here, like Chris Sanchez and Michael Lorenzen are both, you know, Sanchez is already at a career high in innings between the majors and minors. Lorenzen is getting up there. It's definitely a high for him in the last, I think, like 8 years. So there's different ways that they can manage this. And I also think that with an eye to the postseason, Paul, they're thinking about how are we going to best use these guys, right? So let's just assume, and people might think this is too big of an assumption, but let's just assume that Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola are starting games 1 and 2 of a postseason series.
I think that's fair to assume. Yeah.
I know people might quibble with the Nola thing, but he's your game 2 starter.
Yeah.
Then you start to figure out, okay, how can we best use all of the pitchers on our pitching staff? And I think this is my perception of this, Paul, and maybe you would disagree with me. It was like, I think they have better. They have a better pitching staff. Like, they're better positioned to play matchup and use openers and stuff in the postseason as they were than they were last year. I think they just have more better pitchers.
Ooh, well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, we've definitely seen guys like Strom and Hoffman go multiple innings at different points in games and in the season. I guess if you're thinking about, you know, pulling an interesting matchup, then yeah, you could deploy somebody like a Hoffman or a Strom for the first inning or two, maybe ahead of like Ranger if you're not feeling too good about his bulk ability. I don't really know. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that before. Do you think it's possible we could see an opener in a playoff situation? It would have to be in the next round, right? Or maybe game three of the wild card if it came to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we saw them last year, you know, at times use a starter and say, you're going through the lineup once.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's not really an opener. It's more, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Functionally, right? The same thing. You know, I see what you're getting at.
But I think, well, listen, like if you have Ranger, a guy who you know can fill a bunch of different roles and do it well, and is very good against lefty hitters. Mm-hmm. Look at his numbers; it's quite good. You have a guy in Strom who you trust for more than an inning. You like him against righties and lefties. You have a guy in Lorenzen who you know can start for you. You also know that he's been a setup reliever, high leverage guy in the past.
Mm.
If you have different matchups you like here, I think there's a lot of ways that you can make this work, and so. That's a long way of saying, like, they need to find out what's going on with Walker here, right? And they're going to give him some extra rest. And the six-man rotation allows him to do that right now. Like, he's going to bump back to that Giants series, provided that he is healthy. And everyone says he's healthy. He's just kind of a dead-arm thing, and I'll buy that for now.
Yeah, all right.
They're going to have him throw, you know, a bullpen in Toronto, and if they like what they see, then he's probably starting, you know, either Tuesday or Wednesday against the Giants next week.
Okay.
And because you have the six man, it allows you to, you know, to give him some extra rest. So that's good. And that's a benefit of the six man rotation right now. But the way I look at it, Paul, is like Walker to me is the kind of guy where if he's not starting a postseason game for you, he doesn't really have much value, right? He's not one of those guys where you're like, oh, he's going to be a weapon for us in the bullpen.
No, I don't think so. I could agree with that. I could see it would be kind of a weird thing on its face, a dichotomy, I guess you could say, to have a guy you just inked to a 4-year deal be left off of a round of a postseason roster. But I could see that, really, because the way those series are set up, they're short sprints, probably going to play a little bit of matchup. And yeah, I would not feel super confident in using Walker out of the bullpen or as a bulk guy as things sit right now. You know, hopefully he bounces back from this. You know, it is dead arm, and hopefully it is just that. You could stretch it a little bit if he has a nice bounce back and say, all right, fine, maybe, I guess. But nah, certainly not one of my first options.
Well, but in a 5 or 7 game series, he's probably starting a game for you, right?
Sure.
And that's okay. Like, because he's, you know, we focus a lot on the negatives with Walker. But I mean, he has gotten the job done. And I know in the playoffs, the margin is thinner, right? It's like if he all of a sudden goes out there and doesn't have his best stuff, it's like, oh man, like how long do we want to let this go? Like, is this going to work? Like, you know, you can get away with it in a regular season game where you look up and he's pitched 6 innings and given up 3 or 4 runs. You're like, oh, okay. You know, did his job. But like in the playoffs, you know, you're probably not looking for that kind of vibe. But I think they have some ideas, and I think it would really behoove them to, you know, pad their lead and feel more comfortable, you know, mid late September, where they can sort of align things and figure out how do we want to use all these guys. I think, you know, they have a really interesting and potentially dangerous pitching situation in October.
Dangerous in a good way, or?
Yeah, dangerous in a good way. Yes. Oh, okay. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
No, I was about to start sweating and be like, uh-oh, what am I missing?
No. I mean, like, of course, a lot is on Wheeler and Nola. Like, you need them to be your top of the rotation pitchers. But after that, like, I think they have a lot of options. Like, they match up well against a team with righties or a team with lefties because they have these pitchers in Suarez and Strom and Lorenzen and Hoffman, really, if you want to include him, who can be deployed in unique and creative ways.
Interesting. I'm thinking more about what you were saying with the eight-man bullpen, you know, some sort of roster transition that's coming up. And I'm just looking at the depth chart here, trying to make this work. I'm also thinking about Christian Pache, who's probably, we assume, also closing in on a return. He would go in for, I'm guessing, Wes Wilson.
Pache is going to keep playing for AAA this week. They're not going to activate him right away. They're going to let him get a few more bats.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Yeah, you can buy some time. Nice story for Wes Wilson, by the way. Love seeing a dude come up and hit a dinger in his first trip to the plate, even more so when it's for my team. That was awesome. That was fantastic. I'm just thinking more now, when Alvarado comes back, you're mentioning there's not really a ton of optional flexibility going on with the pitching staff as it stands right now, because you don't expect Chris Sanchez to get sent out like you normally would.
I mean, he might get sent out.
He might? You really think so?
Maybe they do it to manage his innings. I mean, who else are you going to send out?
Well, I'm looking at it like if you're going with an eight-man bullpen, five-man rotation, I don't know. Maybe you go short bench and option out Castro. He seems a little redundant right now.
You're only allowed to have 13 pitchers.
Yeah, maybe my math is off with there.
You're only allowed to have 13 pitchers, yeah. You can't do that. I mean, I'm sure they would love to do that. They would probably love to go with a short bench.
Yeah, I had the mental math off there. I just think it's interesting now because they've had these opportunities to move Sanchez back and forth as they needed in past seasons, where he's just sort of been, let's say, not performing as well as he has this year. And now in a good way, he's forcing their hand into, oh man, it's a tougher decision to send him out. Even though I'm still not fully in on, I go back and forth on Chris Sanchez as to how far bought in I am on him right now. It just feels like, it feels a little more undeserved. And I know that's cruel. I know that happens. It feels a little more undeserved than in optionings past for Chris Sanchez to be one of the casualties here.
Now, I'm saying this fully acknowledging that what he's done for them, he's been a huge boost for them. You know, remember all those stressful moments where like, who's going to be the fifth star of his team? How many bullpen games are they going to do? This is crazy. Yeah. He really, really stepped up.
Yes, he did.
But if I'm making a 13-man pitching staff for the postseason, he's not on it.
Hmm. Really?
Is he on yours?
Well, all right. Let's think of it this way, right? In terms of handedness, and at least thinking about guys who can get lefties out, you do have three guys who you would put ahead of him. And normally that is not a good sign for your chances of making a playoff roster. In some order and in some capacity, you have Ranger ahead of him, absolutely, in some bulk way. You have Matt Strom ahead of him right now, I would say, and he can pick up multiple innings if the situation calls for it. And you have Greg Soto, who, even though he's either zero runs allowed or four runs allowed this year, you might trust him in a short burst to, you know, pick up the outs ahead of Sanchez. Now, that's where things can get a little hazy, and I can understand there being more debate, because Greg Soto, when he's off, is very, very stressful. He's like Jose Alvarado back in the first months when, you know, he was acquired before he turned superhuman. So I could see that. And again, it's another unfortunate thing because he's done some really good work here in the middle of the season, you know, solidifying the back end of the rotation. It's not small potatoes. It's not a thing you can just be like, oh, fifth starter. All right, fine. You need those guys. How many times, and somebody out there might be sick of me saying this, but how many times have I and we said that you need that fifth starter to get to the playoffs? And if they're crap, then you you have problems that trickle down. And Chris Sanchez has not been crap. It's been far from that. I would hate to see that be the move, but the more I think about it, the more I look at the depth chart,
Did they carry 12 or 13 pitchers in the postseason last year?
Well, I know they carried Gibson for a bit. I have to go back and look.
I mean, for a three-game series, you're carrying 12 pitchers.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure. Absolutely.
So, I mean, I've got 11 here, and it's going to be a coin flip between Junior Marte, Chris Sanchez, Dylan Covey, Andrew Bellotti. So maybe Sanchez is on. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh here, but I don't see I see a lot of guys ahead of him. And again, it's not to diminish what he's done, but it's just, yeah. I mean, it's essentially the Gibson role from last year, Gibson / Falter role. You know, Falter was left off the postseason roster until the NLCS and then wasn't on the World Series roster. So, that's kind of what I envision. Maybe there's a specific matchup where they think that they could carry Sanchez, but, yeah, I mean, he's probably the odd man out.
Yeah. Well, if it came down to him or Covey, I'd take Sanchez.
I know where you're
but
going. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's, you know,
that's the so guy. Again, down. That's a guy. It's like, yeah, it's like if you're using this guy in a game,
right?
If you're using this guy in a game, then either something terrible has happened or you're playing a long game or you're up by a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's fair. I mean, the rules shift a lot when you talk about these short series. So even though it would be unfortunate if it came to that.
But
yeah, I could see it.
But again, here in September, and, you know, later this month, maybe they find opportunities to try Sanchez in that sort of fireman role or sort of maybe a shorter burst role, right? I mean, maybe they...
Do they piggyback?
I think they're going to try to piggyback at some
point. Okay.
And
okay.
I don't know what the... I don't know who it'll be, but I'm guessing it'll be some kind of combination of Sanchez and Lorenzen. Maybe mm-hmm. Suarez involved somehow. Because they know he can, you know, maybe they want to get him more exposure to that sort of maybe coming into the middle of a game. I do think, yes, that they're going to try something like that. I do. Just to expose those guys, because they want to, I mean, what was so good about what they did last year was that they were so upfront with the guys, like being like, hey, we're, you know, this is how we're going to use you. This is how we might use you, you know, be ready for anything. And, you know, we see Alvarado come into the game in the fourth inning or whatever. I mean, it's,
yeah.
You know, but those guys were ready for it. You know, Suarez ready to, you know, to pitch as a reliever on 2 days rest. I mean, that was really what stood out to me is how they handled the pitching in the postseason is that it was, it really was a joint effort in, you know, getting guys ready for those roles. And they didn't have the luxury of a few weeks to prepare those guys. So this time
no.
They do. And I think it, you know, I really think it could help them in how they approach this postseason.
It absolutely could. And, you know, in a couple of weeks when the rosters expand, it's going to be nice to get another arm up because I think one dangerous thing in a bad way this time, one dangerous thing you'd like to avoid in September is overusing guys on the pitching staff. You know, they've done such a good job. You know, this is a little shout out to Rob Thompson and the guys in the bullpen for making this happen. But I was looking at the way Phillies pitchers have performed on no rest. So back to backs. And the staff as a whole is holding hitters under a 600 OPS on back-to-back games. They've had 60 of those so far through this season. And it's the first time they've been under a 600 opponent's OPS in that split since 1980. And it's fourth best in the league right now. And the four teams that are ahead of them, well, two of the three teams that are ahead of them, Atlanta and Milwaukee, are known for having good pitching. Milwaukee's still in the playoff hunt. Atlanta obviously winning the division. The Yankees are the other team, and they're, you know, they have good pitching, but the offense without Aaron Judge is just nothing right now. So the Phillies have done a good job getting deployed in the right way. It's worked. The process for the relief usage has worked so far. I think we can all pretty much agree on that one right now. I just would not like to see, you know, the rotation needing to be shortened in September, possibly with piggybacks and all of this. It opens the door for the possibility for if one of your other guys has a short start, needs to get, you know, a little bit of help, Dylan Covey comes in, you know, back it up with another short outing by piggyback guys. Maybe they don't clear five innings. I'm just saying it's possible. I would hate for that boat to get rocked because it's really just worked up to this point in mid-August. Guys getting used at the right times in the right amount of ways. They're not getting gassed. Even as much as Craig Kimbrell has been used, he doesn't appear to be losing a lot of steam, which continues to be incredible.
Not yet, but yeah, you got it. You really want to watch out for him here.
Yeah. So it's just something to keep an eye on. You know, it makes it that much more important to give yourself this luxury of having more time at the end of the year to get things right, to take more than two games in the last series of the year to really figure things out. You'll take what you can get. I'll take what I can get. But the fact is, the more you can bank and the more you can just let guys only throw 50 pitches in an outing and not have to worry too much about who comes after him, that's nice. It's a nice feeling to have. I want to see the hangover day lineup, man.
Do you know who I think we're going to see a lot of in September?
Who's that?
Nick Nelson.
You know, it's about time. And he's been starting for AAA, right?
Yeah, I think he's actually pitched fairly well down there from what I understand. You know, just like the numbers are decent, but just beyond that. And it's funny because, like, I think he led them in, like, relief batters faced last season, and he hasn't spent a day in the majors this year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's definitely a guy who could soak up some innings. You know, I just pulled up his page. He's averaging between 4 and 5 innings a start, AAA, not striking out a ton of guys, but then he never really has. He's doing okay. He's fine. Yeah, I would be fine with seeing Nick Nelson come up and devour a few innings in September. So you think right now he's the leading candidate to be the extra guy on the pitching side in September?
I don't know. I mean, it's like they can swap, you know, they can swap guys in and out if they wanted to. But I think if they get to a point where they want some innings, yeah, I think he would make sense.
Well, these are problems we'd like to have, honestly. And
are we putting the cart before the horse here?
You know, I always worry about doing something like that just because I'm such a mush when it comes to all these different things, or I feel like I mush so many different things that I hate talking about things so far in the future. And it's just a month when they haven't locked it up yet that I feel some kind of cosmic thing. It's not the same as jinxing a no hitter, by the way. Don't be mean to people who talk about no hitters in process. But me personally, I feel like when I bring this stuff up, then they immediately go on a 5-game losing streak. And I'm just like, now I got to talk about bad things again. But
I mean,
no, it's like,
not to say, I mean, like, even a 5-game losing streak right now, I mean, it wouldn't be good, but it's like, I don't know. I mean, like, I look at the rest of the other teams that they're going up, you know, competing with right now. It's just, I just see so much mediocrity. I mean, like, how many wins, Paul, is going to be the sixth seed?
84? Going to be the sixth seed?
85?
Yeah, I think they'll just barely scrape over 500 the way things are going right now. It's not many.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's yeah. And the Marlins and the Giants have an insane schedule this month. The rest of the month, so do the Padres, as we went over. The Central, I don't know what to make of those teams.
Me neither.
I guess there's going to be two Central teams in the postseason. Good God.
Well, I mean, and you float that hypothetical, right? Let's say that third wild card spot does need 85. Well, the Phillies are 65 wins right now. They need to go 20-23 through the rest of their schedule to hit 85. That 85. Yeah.
I think it's going to, yeah. I mean, it might even be less than 85, but let's just say it's 85. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty low bar, and that's a nice place to be at. It's why banking these wins, you know, you can look at Pythagorean stuff, and I was doing that with the Padres, and the Phillies on the flip side are overperforming theirs by a couple of games. But in actual terms, what they have actually done in the standings where it counts, I'd like Pythag. I'm just being real here. They've got the wins. They're 11 games over 500, and they only have to do, you know, slightly sub 500 ball the rest of the year to really still realistically put themselves in the playoffs, right? And anything better than that is just icing on the cake, where they can think about reconfiguring their staff and doing all of the weird things that we're talking about, like starting Nick Nelson a few times.
Yeah. And remember, a ton of home games after this 5-game trip here to Toronto, Washington, and Williamsport. They have, mm-hmm. you know, another 10-game homestand coming up. You might see Ohtani pitching. Do you see that?
Well, that would be nice. And we missed him.
Yeah, because they rearranged the rotation a little bit, and it looks as if he will be pitching at Citizens Bank Park.
Yeah, because he's had some hand cramping and some arm fatigue, I think, lately, and he did not pitch during the series that reinvigorated the team last season, when he basically, you know, he and Trout went 0 for the series almost.
But right now, Phillies have the 7th best home record in the sport. Mm-hmm. And after this trip, they have a large majority of their games to be played at home. So, I mean, yeah, everything trending in their favor right now, and to the point where I think you can start thinking about how do you want this thing to look by the time you get to the end? How can they get this in the best, you know, optimized spot? I hate that word. But, yeah, I do. I really do think their pitching could. If they do it right, the pitching could be a big time strength. I mean, it's been all year.
Wild. Like, yeah.
And I just think when you look up and down the roster and you compare to what they brought into the postseason last year, I think they have a deeper, better, more quality, you know, to sort of throw out a team in a short series and even in a longer series.
No, they're definitely still a huge, huge weapon in short series. I mean, everybody's dangerous in short series. A best of three, absolutely anything could happen. But if the Phillies lock up that fourth seed, play the second wild card with the potential of facing the Braves, you would assume they finish first, although the Dodgers are lurking and they're not out of it.
Which is crazy to me.
It's the wild.
Dodgers. Yeah.
Freddie Freeman is all of a sudden challenging for the batting title that we thought was Luis Arraez's from, you know, late May on through the end of the year. They're a wild franchise, man, the way they can just turn it on every single year. But yeah, they're only a couple of games back. It's possible they take the number one seed. I don't know. I think Atlanta is probably good enough to hold on there, but it's something to watch.
Gosh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I didn't even think about that. If you're the Phillies and you win that first round, you might end up in LA.
Yep. You could end up in LA instead of facing Atlanta for a rematch, which, hey, either one of those series, really, really difficult, but should be a lot of fun to watch.
You're big time underdogs in either one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. But to your point, if everybody's healthy, yeah, the Phillies are absolutely right there with everybody, you know, even the Braves, even the Dodgers.
Right there, but yeah, they are.
Look, in a five-game series, three-game series, yes, everything's equal because it's basically a coin flip. But in a five-game series, if you can get a little bit more vintage out of Aaron Nola, you can feel better about this. But if you're throwing Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, and Ranger Suarez in your first three games of a best of five, you have to feel pretty good about that. Even though those are two really good offenses, those are your top arms. And you have to feel good about your chances to stay in the game, especially with the way the staff as a whole is pitched. If you grab a lead early too, confidence is running really high that the bullpen can hold it down for you. Now, a lot relies on Alvarado coming back and looking good, not walking as many guys as he had, you know, during his brief return from the first IL stint. There are conditions up and down for sure. And I think that's part of what makes the Phillies a bit of an underdog here is there are more questions about their top players than the Braves or the Dodgers. Nobody's really questioning those teams right now. But, you know, on the positive side of things, they, I think, stack up really well with anybody else in this league. Now, they could get blown out, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, you're also like coming out of the wild card series, you're not going to have, you know, Wheeler is probably, you know, not starting game one of the NLDS.
It's probably, that is true.
You know, it's probably, if you get it done in two games like they did last year, miraculously, you know, you can set it up. I mean, let's not forget, what was that first game in Atlanta that they won? Was still like, probably it might have been even crazier than the game that they won in St. Louis the first game, because do you remember, I mean, who they used to pitch in game one of the NLDS? It was Suarez, Bilotti, Brogdon, Hand, Dominguez, Alvarado, Eflin. Remember that
I'm
game?
Just pulling
that
up the box crazy. Now yeah,
that game was crazy. And it wasn't even as close as it should. I mean, they won by one run, but, you know, Eflin gave up a bunch in the ninth, I remember.
Yeah, the home run.
Yeah, so, look, I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, Blotti and Brogdon are in the minor leagues right now for them. Hand is on the Braves, which is kind of funny. But the guys who would be pitching those spots instead now are better. They're just better.
And so we have to feel good. I'm sorry if this is the Paul Boyer mush coming into play, but I feel good. I feel good about the way the last month plus has gone. I like the way Trey Turner is hitting. I like the way, you know, the pitchers are throwing the ball. They lost two straight games on Saturday and Sunday. Okay. Yeah, fine. In the context of what's been happening, you know, in the rest of August, I'll take that. That's okay. That's a fair trade. If we get the rest of it, it's hard not to feel optimistic, which is a weird way to be across an entire episode here, but I feel like it's warranted, finally.
Do you know who's excited to be playing in Canada?
Who is excited to be playing in Canada, Matt?
I think JT Realmuto is excited.
Oh, I'm sure he is thrilled to be playing in Canada. Blue Jays are a fun team.
Yeah, I did a radio hit this morning with Toronto radio station. They said that I described the Phillies as a team that has really ridden its pitching, and you know, recently the lineup is starting to get hot, but they've had some stars who've underperformed, and one of the radio hosts up there described the Blue Jays as a team that has ridden its pitching with a lot of star hitters that have underperformed, and they have a very similar record and a very similar, I guess, dynamic. Although they're seventh in runs in the AL. That is surprising to me.
Yeah, because
they were higher.
Yeah, their lineup has been mostly very good. I think Alejandro Kirk has taken a step back, and Dalton Barshow.
George Springer has had a rough year. Yeah,
Springer has not been what you expect. Right. Bichette is hurt at the moment. Matt Chapman fell off a lot
big time
from his start. So, you know, that sort of obscures things. But they've gotten a bounce back from Whit Merrifield, which has been nice to see, among other things.
Yeah. So I'll be Davis in Davis Schneider on Sunday. I'm excited for that. Might see the media Little League team, Delco proud.
Delco versus the world.
So
look out, world.
Yeah, and then next week, that Giants series, will be a lot of fun. I think it's can't wait to see Gabe's guys.
They're back. You know, it's funny. I remember back when Gabe was first assuming control of the team on the field, he made an effort to reach out to a few of us who were on the fan side, the writing side.
This was very
controversial. I'm sure it was. We didn't really talk too much, but I remember... I remember one thing that immediately stood out to me and told me right then and there that I'm probably going to have a hard time connecting with this guy. He mentioned, after looking through some other writing that I did on some like personal sites about music, that he was a big music guy too. He was open to recommendations, and I recommended a Superchunk song to him. And I did not know Gabe. I did not know Gabe very well at that time, and it wasn't until I realized he's more of the Norah Jones type that
he's
I
got
knew
a lot of types.
We were, yeah, super. He's, I don't think Super Chunk is
musical taste. Yeah,
I don't think Super Chunk ended up being one of his new faves.
I don't think so.
So that was the moment when I figured we were probably not going to get on super well. But yes, Gabe will be back, and I'm sure he will receive a warm.
He's got like a crazy record against the Phillies, right? Since he got fired, right?
Well, because
I'll have to look that up, but yeah.
Because he attached himself to the Giants, who are the devil incarnate when it comes to playing the Phillies. That's not his doing. That's the specter of the demon Giants doing all the work. Cursed franchise.
I think they're running out of luck.
Yeah. Okay. They're about to get some more. Every time the Giants come up somehow, I get all fired up, and I don't mean to. We were having a nice little ramp off toward the end of this, and now I'm all riled up again thinking about the Giants.
12-3 against the Phillies since he got fired. 12-3.
Stop it. No. I don't want to hear anymore. I want this series to be over. Hate the Giants. Anyway.
Talk to you next week.
Yeah, man. Let's wrap this up so I can go wind down and do some breathing exercises. The Phillies are still doing well, man. They're the top wild card right now. Guys are hitting. Guys are pitching. Hope for health. Hope for continued health. We'll hopefully see Jose Alvarado and Christian Pache coming back in the next, you know, days to weeks. Not more than 1 or 2 weeks, thankfully.
Probably another week, yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully get the band back together at full strength and get
Brandon
through
Marsh
this.
Marsh on the horizon then, too. You know, I think Marsh
starting
to ramp up stuff a little bit. And, you know, I don't know if he's back for that Giants series, but I wouldn't, like, totally rule that out.
It's good to see. Good to see guys healthy as you approach the stretch run here. So that's good. Continue to feel good. Continue to feel optimistic, even in the face of the way the Twin Series ended up this past weekend. Toronto is up next, and the Phillies will have to bring their A game and do a little bit of slugging, I think, to take this one or better. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for another week. Hopefully you continue to feel as good as we do. For Matt, go check his stuff out at theathletic.com. As always, Matt, I am Paul. We'll catch you guys next week.